Structured Logging with Nicholas Blumhart.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. This podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. They are hiring both architects and .NET engineers who'd like a path to become an architect. So you can go to clearmeasure.com/careers for that. And if you have a comment or question for the show, just send me an email at podcast@palermo.network. And also, my new online TV show has launched. You can search for, quote, Programming with Palermo in any of the podcast directories. You can also find it on YouTube and www.palermo.network. And my guest today on the show is Nicholas Blumhart, and he is the founder and CEO of a company called Datalust, which brings you the Seek product. He's a core maintainer for Sierralog and is the founder of AutoFac, an inversion control container. He's also a longtime .NET program manager at Microsoft back in the day, and he resides in Brisbane, Australia. Nicholas, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Yeah, great. Jeffrey, pleased to be here. Yeah, thanks. That's quite the long intro. I guess I've just been trolling through the .NET world.
Oh, you've done a lot.
For some time. Hey, yeah. New show sounds really cool. The Programming with Palermo, is it?
Yes.
Are you live coding right under the like?
That's right.
Under the bright lights. That's really tough. Cool.
I think we're up to show number 217 on the Azure DevOps podcast and bringing experts like you on. I love interviewing experts and getting the perspectives of the new TV show is just where I teach. This is kind of fun. I like to teach.
That sounds really cool.
So It's new. I think we're only 15 sessions in, but welcome to the show. And
Hopefully I can get you in the mode to add some structured logging onto that, that kind of schedule too.
Yeah. I'll spill the beans. I like using Sierralog. So, and the Seek tool. But before I'd like to talk to you about that and structured logging. You're an expert in that area. But before we get in, there's people, not in Australia or haven't heard you speak at NDC or other conferences that are just getting to know you. Tell us a little bit about your background. What caused you to kind of get into this line of programming and any high points that led you to what you're working on today?
Okay, yeah. So I started programming when I was a kid, like probably a lot of us would have. But I worked as a consultant in the .NET world for quite a while, skipping around between different projects and seeing, I guess, just how everybody lived. The project that actually got me started looking into structured logging, we were building a system that took payments. It's just like the classic kind of thing in a financial institution. And we realized that we've been writing all of this really interesting log data, while people were interacting with the system. And we really didn't have anything to equal it in any of the reports that we could actually produce from the database. And so we're kind of wondering how people are actually using this software that we ship. But I spent a couple of hours. I was a consultant, so always trying to kind of get the quick wins, trying to pull these log files apart with regular expressions. And it just wasn't a reliable enough process that I thought that I could rely on that data being correct to present to anybody in the business. And it got me thinking about the kind of massive waste that we had in that space back then, where programmers always, I guess, taken some interest and pride in writing logs with our applications. But the process is just so lossy. You have all of this really intricate kind of structured information while the app runs, and then you blot it out into plain text. And then afterwards, you can see visually, like using your own kind of neurons, how that whole narrative fits together when you open up a log file. But there wasn't really any way to go back and pull those files apart and start to pull the numbers out and the types of events that were happening and you know, we have great tools for doing all other kinds of data analysis. So I think around about the same time, the folks at Patterns and Practices started building a thing called the semantic logging application block, which is one of their fantastic mouthful names that you can imagine PMP love to cook up. And it had this really cool idea, structured logging at the time that I hadn't really encountered before, because I'd imagine that structured logging was kind of writing blobs of JSON into text files. And that sort of throws out all of the kind of human friendly benefits of logs. Like, you know, logs are a narrative and you can kind of read them to get a picture of what the app's doing. And that just uses all that linguistic center in the brain. And if you switch that over to something that's machine readable like JSON, but not human friendly, then you're kind of throwing out the baby with the bathwater and grappling to actually read those logs, you know, to build a picture yourself. So PMP did this semantic logging application block thing based around, I think the Windows event log was what drove it. And Windows event log, you have to register a manifest for the events that you're recording, and it kind of describes what the event types are, and then you pop the properties in to fill out those kinds of templates when you raise events. I think because originally they were trying to build really compact efficient events for things like Windows device drivers and stuff like that. With every event, they really just wanted to log the type and some property info. But PMP took that and tried to make it something that application programmers could use with a .NET API. What really stopped me from jumping, you know, headfirst into that was that the API for logging there was completely different. And I didn't really want to try to go into consulting projects and say, here's this fantastic new way to do logging, but you have to do it completely differently from anything you've ever done before. You know, instead of just jotting a log statement down, you can switch over and write a class and attribute it with some extra info and call a method, you know. And I think, you know, as a consultant, you're always kind of on the lookout for anything wasteful that you might introduce. So Serilog was kind of like a fusion of those ideas, taking that kind of template-based approach to separating like what the event is and what the sort of specific data values are that got plugged in, along with just the classic log4net style logging API. And so we eventually, after I'd spent some time working on Serilog as an open source project on the side, got some experience using that through different kinds of applications, and you know, started to build a bit of a bigger picture and see that that was really a life-changing kind of change in perspective for being an application programmer. Like, rather than just sort of being able to easily parse the logs that I was already writing, I could think about building something that was more like a developer interface for the app. Like, because once you can easily access log data, or like, which are really just structured events, like event sourcing style, even sometimes you imagine you have this stream that kind of details everything going on in the system. You're not really just thinking about parsing it anymore, but you're kind of designing it. So say you're writing a pizza ordering system, you know, you can really think about, okay, how to connect the stages of pizza ordering and how to model the toppings. And then you can start to think about how you might want to extract information about, like, you know, what decisions people are having. You know, you can really, in whatever business domain you're in, you can start to kind of pick apart that data that's in the application at runtime and try to design a way to then have like plan to dig info out of it later on after you've deployed it.
Yeah.
That was, I guess, at the beginning of the whole DevOps movement as well, where, you know, instead of throwing this stuff over the wall, we're not just writing log events and then having to parse a log file somebody else has already written, but we're really thinking about what's going to be important to me when I'm operating this system, and how am I going to make my life easier, and what kind of data can I, you know, what kind of things can I build in, you know, to make that the most efficient process possible.
Yeah.
Now we've been on this observability hype train for like ages. It's kind of hard to see that again. I guess it's like DevOps as well, where, you know, the original kind of force behind DevOps was that, you know, as a developer operating your own code, you know, you could actually do that more efficiently by really eating your own dog food, by seeing what the results were and taking responsibility, and then using all the tools that you have as a developer to make better, more operable systems. And I think that as like time progressed and vendors started to come out with a lot more sophisticated tools, that became probably a bit de-emphasized in DevOps, and we've sort of got a huge suite of tooling and technology and stuff like that today that people associate with DevOps. But if you dig back into why we originally set out on that path, it was It was much more about the practices. Mm-hmm. I think observability and structured logging is very, very similar. Like in the beginning, when I started to become interested in this space, it wasn't that I wanted to spend 10 years of my life building a log server or a logging library. It was really that I wanted to write better software and have tools that let me more efficiently operate it. And I think that's the thrust of the whole observability idea. Now, of course, it's like, specs and buzzwords and tools and graphics, which is great too. We've got amazing tools. We're living in like a golden age, I think, for this sort of stuff. But I think that kind of idea of building your systems so that they are easier to run and diagnose issues in is really where it's all at. Like structured logging is an interesting tool for it. But I think that observability or application diagnostics is also much wider. Like we build this log event server, really a database in its core called Seek. And we don't tend to use a lot of logging ourselves in that product at its heart, particularly because there are other techniques that work better in that space. And there's this creativity that you can still apply where if you imagine for SQL Server, you write a query and you need to know how that's running. I mean, you might go to the SQL Server logs, but what you really want is a query plan. And it's going to give you a description of what SQL Server is going to do. And then you can even run the query against the plan and see what nodes in that plan, at least I'm thinking Postgres, explain, analyze, you can see what nodes in the plan took the time to actually execute. And it's really doing exactly the same thing that structured logs and metrics and other instrumentation kind of techniques are using, but it's creatively applied to that space of running a database engine. So I also think that while structured logging is kind of being this common thread that I've spent lots of time on with Serilog and otherwise, I think that core idea of just really thinking hard about how to make your system's internals more visible is actually where all of the interesting meat in this space is.
That's a good point. Observability versus structured logging. So structured logging is just one tool in the tool belt to achieve observability. Tell me what you think about this statement. There are people who are saying, and I think I'm one of them, you should always know everything that your software is doing and everything that the users of your software are doing. Do you take it to that extreme? Or
I think until you reach a point where that's an unmanageable volume of data, yeah, sure. I think that's actually a fair call. It is always, I think you do have to, and you say that with some qualifications, I think, in the back of your mind around moderating the effort you would put into those things, according to your expected payoff. Like I wouldn't dedicate half of my development budget on a project to instrumenting every nook and cranny. But sure. I think that if the data is there and you may need to use it later on and the cost of logging it out or recording it somewhere is low, then yeah, definitely I'd default to recording it. So that really ties back to what I was saying about the difference between kind of structured logging through like a kind of a structured event API and structured logging through something like Serilog, where it's just printf, like write a string, format some data into it, and then magically get structured logs out at the end. You really need to be able to kind of tactically just sprinkle a couple of log statements in and not feel like it's a huge overhead to record that stuff. So yeah, I kind of agree, although log data grows really fast.
Right. But you can always turn it off. That's the good part. But in observability, besides structured logging or any kind of logging, what other tools do you tend to reach for to gain the observability that you need?
So I've always really enjoyed metrics as another kind of a handy, flexible tool. I think there are a few kind of basic practices like structured logs, metrics, and recently now we're seeing kind of an emergence of traces, which are sort of a hierarchical version of that sort of data. There are a few of those kind of core techniques that are not necessarily the complete story, but they're very flexible. And so you can fit a lot of different kinds of data into one of those models. Like if you need to record counters, for example, you can just record those in structured logs. And there's still ways to extract that info and get the insights you get from dedicated metrics. But with what we do particularly, we do rely very heavily on metrics as a way to kind of leave, I guess, an indication of what area of the system we want to dig into when there's a problem. Mm-hmm. So Seek itself, our log server kind of observability platform, has a lot of code that's in very tight loops, very sensitive. And so, you know, we don't necessarily want to produce a lot of data volume out of it when it runs. So things like being able to just increment an atomic counter and then get a metric recorded later on as a kind of a clue that something happened is a really useful technique for us. And I think if you've got like in that kind of central tight loop kind of part of a system, you know, metrics are another great one to reach for, and one that's been great tools around for a while too.
Okay.
But yeah.
Well, so let's jump back to Cerelock, because I think probably a lot of listeners don't know what it is. Maybe they've heard of the term, maybe they haven't, but okay.
Logging. I probably plunged right in there. Yeah. Well,
I've used it. I actually love it. I think it's a brilliant idea. And then the combination of Seek, that's really interesting too. But let's tell the listeners what the heck it is and how is it different from other built-in techniques right in .NET for logging.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
Yeah, so Cerelock, I guess, is made of two parts, I think. And since like Cerelock's, we're actually about 2 months away from Cerelock's 10th birthday, which is just out there. So Cerelock is like an interface for structured logging, which was kind of where a lot of the innovative kind of difference was in it when it was released. And it's a pipeline for processing and routing structured log events through your app. So Cerelock's interface, like what you use when you write log events in your app, is built around this idea called message templates, which is designed, I think, to look a lot like .NET format strings. You start out, you want to write a log event, say, I go back to pizza because that's where some of the thorniest, once worked on a system that actually did pizza ordering. And there's some really wacky diagnostic kind of issues in those kinds of things. So the interface for structured logging with Cerelock, you might add an order for a pepperoni pizza to your cart, and you know you want to record the information that product was added, and say the product ID, and you write it out into your log with something like log.information, you know, adding one times product 15 to the cart. But when you write that event in the like line of text that you're writing out, instead of the sort of zero or one placeholders or string interpolation, you add named placeholders for the values like the number of items and the product ID. Mm-hmm. So that behind the scenes, even though it looks like you're just formatting out a text string, like about adding that product, Cerelock captures the format string along with the placeholder values. So, you know, one item and pizza 15. The cool thing about that API, that interface to structured logging, is just that if you're recording those events out to a terminal, a debugger or something like that at development time, you can just read them as text. You don't really need to see structured data at that point when you're building an app. You do need to sort of view log events early in the development process, because if the log events are not good quality, you know, not sort of vetted and validated as being useful for debugging, then they're probably not going to be useful in prod either. But you can write Cerelock events out in text to the console, and then we'll just read like adding one times pizza 15 to the cart. But the other side of Cerelock, which is the kind of the data pipeline, it keeps the template and those property values separate. So behind the scenes, what you saw rendered just as a line of text in the console is actually like a format string, which is the message template, and then pizza ID, pizza 15, and quantity 1. Mm-hmm. And those three pieces of data are all kept separate, so that if you send them off to a database or some other store, like a log server that supports structured data, you can go and query for all of the times that pizza 15 was added to the cart just by writing like pizza ID equals 15 and that kind of query. And you'll find all of those events because the values were not lost when they're formatted into the message. They can be just attached as regular JSON properties. Mm-hmm. You format them out when you really want to, when you want to read the human readable message, you format them out, but otherwise. And so the back end of Serilog is really all built around those kinds of, that kind of data model, like an event with a template that describes it, some placeholder, like some property values that get written into the template, you know, to render it. And then all of the contextual information about what was going on in your app when that property, when that event happened. You know, in the pizza website, you know, there might be request ID already pushed onto the kind of log context stack. Mm-hmm. You might have also attached a correlation ID based on some kind of incoming header if you have a, you know, a REST call or a web service call or something coming in. And you might also have pushed on like the order ID or the customer ID. So then that backend of Serilog is really designed to kind of give you this ability to correlate your logs in multiple dimensions based on all kinds of pieces of data and attributes that you might add. I mentioned, I think, traces before, where you kind of like, because we talked about correlation just a moment ago, like traces, which have become a big thing because there's really amazing tooling for them in different systems, you know. They're all about, I think, giving you the kind of causal dimension, like this thing happened in service B because of this call from service A. Give you this great kind of overview of how your system is fit together. Serilog and its kind of like a fine-grained event structures give you the other side of the coin, where you attach all of the dimensions to an event that you could possibly imagine wanting to pivot along. And then you can navigate through those logs once you've recorded them. So you can go and find all of the times that pizza 15 was added, but then you might find there's an order ID attached to one of those. And then you pivot and you can find all of the events that were raised in any system, you know, that also recorded that order ID. And when you go from kind of discovery mode, like what's broken in my app, to like how is it broken and trying to debug, Serilog and structured logs are really the key tool for that, because they give you that ability to kind of slice and dice any way you like, and on that fine-grained data. So in .NET today, you're most likely to come across structured logging through Microsoft Extensions Logging, which is, I guess, a re-implementation or kind of a reincarnation of Serilog's interface that the framework itself uses to record things internally. So Serilog was the only logging library that was really complete and able to be ported to .NET Core at the release of .NET Core 1.0. The folks working on that actually saw that and added support for Serilog's message templates into the logging APIs and the abstractions they built for the .NET Core platform or the ASP.NET platform. So internally in ASP.NET, when log events are written, they use that template and placeholder format. And the iLogger of T that ASP.NET exposes, well, now you would say .NET exposes, because I think ASP.NET and .NET have all really become great big bag in some way. Yeah, when the framework gives you a logger to record your log events, it's using that same structure as well, like template and placeholders. So the front end part, like the interface, is partially, I think, covered by what you see in the box with those .NET libraries. And I don't think that there's necessarily strong disadvantages or advantages to using them over Serilog's API. I think Serilog, because it's trying to be a bit less general, has some more specific, friendly ways to attach data to events. But really, in that ecosystem today, Serilog and Nlog and Microsoft Extensions Logging all have a very similar API for recording structured data. On the back end, though, nothing's really yet re-implemented or come particularly close to how Serilog's pipeline's built. Because Serilog was built just for structured log events from the very beginning, we have these concepts like a log event is primarily a bunch of structured data. It's not like a string with some structured stuff attached in a dictionary somewhere. And there's really cool tools in the ecosystem and the people build themselves for manipulating that data on those events as they're logged, like attaching all sorts of interesting kind of context info. And, you know, once you're building against piece of structured data, you know, or the full programming kind of repertoires there to manipulate it in whatever way you like. So that's still something that I think causes Serilog to be kind of the de facto backend for logging in .NET, even when you're using the, you know, the platform APIs. So Serilog itself, I mentioned it began as an open source project. It's still a completely community run open source project. We cut the size of the organization down recently to try to spread some of the load. We had like 67 repositories under the Serilog org on GitHub, because in the early days there was a lot of value in us kind of consolidating our efforts to build and develop all of the syncs, so the plugins where you can tell Serilog to send your events to a SQL Server database or Elasticsearch or Seek or, you know, App Insights or somewhere like that. We centralized all of that in the beginning, but then there was just a Cambrian explosion. There's absolutely, I mean, aside from the ones that we developed in the Serilog project, there's just hundreds of syncs out there for Serilog now. So recently we kind of tried to democratize things in the project a bit more and just make the Serilog core org responsible for the kind of fundamental library and abstractions. But at the time that we split it up, I think we'd had 102, 104 contributors through the org. We've got a team of about 12 people maintaining it. I think now that things are distributed between different orgs, the project probably looks quite different. But it's very much a distributed community run kind of a process. And I think that the kind of unifying ideas have stayed pretty strong over time, like that structured data first. And also, despite like the platform churning a lot, Serilog's managed to kind of not make breaking changes, and so therefore preserve that huge ecosystem for, you know, I think 7 years or more now since we had a really kind of impactful breaking change when we moved to .NET Core, I think, originally. So that's kind of the flavor of Serilog. It's a logging project that's kind of been around for a while and is around for the long haul.
For sure.
So
architecturally, as I'm listening to you, tell me if I've got this right. So many logging tools over the history of .NET have made a string their primary type, that as soon as you log something, it's in string format, and then you can route it various places. But with Serilog, whatever object you pass to the API, it stays as an object until it gets to its destination, and then the destination's responsible for converting it to a string, whatever
you should, format takes, right? You have now recorded that. We should link that from the Serilog site. Perfect explanation. Yeah.
Well, that's really interesting because CQRS or CQS, you know, mindset would have us, you know, separate commands and queries and events. And it sounds like instead, if you're going after that, you don't have to make your own eventing bus or eventing pipeline, because logs kind of, you kind of want to log all events, right?
I think that the availability of like really good quality structured events in Serilog is probably what's pulled me away from that like deep CQRS since I was originally really, really interested in it. And that I think one of the reasons I found the CQRS kind of the event sourcing architecture that I think was associated with it really strongly at one point, you know, I found that really appealing was that the events themselves told this really complete story about what had happened in your app. Mm-hmm. I have implemented a couple of like small and toy systems around similar ideas. I found that changing those fundamentals about how you kind of persist data, it's really challenging to fit into the ecosystem of tools and, you know, expectations, I think, that we've got out there. So I haven't really implemented a large sort of event sourced system, but I've kind of never really felt the need now, because like the database kind of records the static state. And if you put enough effort into that log event stream, then it gives you that dynamic view over time. Mm-hmm. How your system got into the state that it's in.
Well, as we get to our time here and before we wrap up, I want to just ask you a little bit about Seek. It's a, you know, separate product, but it works with Serilog. But why is Seek useful, and why should listeners care and give it a try?
Seek is really like, I think probably giving you a little bit of history, it began purely as a convenient way for me to record application logs from Serilog without throwing anything away. Mm-hmm. I think Seek is particularly interesting still today because of its focus on being a place that you can build like a view of your data. So Seek isn't really about having detailed out of the box kind of pre-canned instrumentation for things like web requests. And I mean, you can do all of this, but it's not about having kind of graphs that immediately tell you kind of what's going on inside your SQL server or inside your website. It's really designed around the idea that your domain is unique. And although like all websites kind of look the same from the outside, like if you're writing the logs for your pizza ordering, like online pizza delivery, you know, you care about the order being created and you care about what toppings are added to a pizza. Mm-hmm. And you might want to query into those toppings in a first class way. So something like, not to pick on it, but something like App Insights, say, which we're all probably quite familiar with because it's an out of the box kind of tool on Azure for a lot of people. It gives you fantastic kind of visualization of the things that are common between your app and everybody else's. But once you want to record something like, a list of pizza toppings attached to your, pizza ordered event, that's sort of where it hands over. And something like Seek that has the detailed structured data view from the ground up is stronger. So in Seek, you can say something like, pepperoni in, pizza dot toppings, and you'll get that, you'll get that first class experience, based around your data. And I think that over time, once you've used the feedback you get from running your own systems in production this way, you'll find that although like everybody does need web request logs and timings and things, like the real value in instrumentation over the long term is all of the thinking and all of the observations and insights that you have as a developer or operations person that are unique to your domain. So Seek is just really like an unopinionated log file, but on steroids, like built for structured data. And so it keeps out of your way and lets you kind of get at your own business domain for diagnostics in a way that I think a few other tools do.
In my usage of Seek, I noticed one thing, because I've also used Application Insights a ton, and it's that there's no delay. With Application Insights, I always found that what I was looking at is at least, 30 seconds, sometimes a minute removed from when it actually happened. Whereas with Seek, I'm sure up to a level of volume, it's happening right then.
Yeah, no, that's definitely really a really deliberate design choice, because I think the other kind of major design kind of focus in Seek is that it's built for production debugging. It's not necessarily for, I guess you get the flavor in the name with insights. You can kind of, insights really talks to me about like finding patterns in data, that kind of thing, which there's some really cool tools for. Seek is about like, I'm running the app and prod and it's failing or it's down and I need to figure out why. And so I can poke and prod at it and I can, I can make orders myself and I can see right then when I press the button exactly what happened behind the scenes immediately. Seek has a much more production debugging focus than I think most of the tools in its space.
That makes sense.
That's probably not a huge coincidence either, because I think we see a lot of visualization and insights kind of like BI type experiences in observability, because they're easy to tell a story around. Like you can sit somebody in front of a bunch of charts that show web requests or like VM CPU usage, and everyone's kind of on the same page and understanding what that means. But actually like sharing the experience of debugging a problem in production and all of the unique approaches and kind of tricky tactics that you need to use to solve, a new bug. That's not something that kind of is easy to demo and as kind of like easy to share with people. So I think we've got amazing tools, but I think we're at the moment, we're kind of at a stage in the cycle where things that visualize and demo really well are really plentiful. And we're kind of getting away a little bit from the core idea that, you know, it's the practices and your own data and your own unique kind of approaches that is where all the value in this stuff lies. I think, I think that's awesome. That's one thing that keeps driving me to work on Seek and make it.
Well, this topic has no shortage of things to talk about. We could probably talk for another hour just on structured logging and all the things that go around it. But I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us about structured logging and Serilog and Seek. So, man, this is hugely enlightening. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Jeffrey. It was really nice.
My pleasure. And we're going to include all the links in the show notes, how you get in contact with Nicholas, as well as links to Serilog and Seek, as well as his AutoFac and his website and his company, Datalust. So, go on the show notes and find all those things. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.